Surprise, surprise, surprise. It's us. We're back. I'm Jordy. With me today,
The Buckster.
The Buckster is here.
Yep.
We have a special guest with us today that we will introduce to you in a few minutes. But we have some important business to discuss here. We were sort of planning on doing this episode initially from the road overseas in Portugal. We wanted to take you all along with us, or at least kind of fill you in on our travels. We made it pretty far. We almost got there. We almost got to Portugal. We actually almost made it to the security checkpoint at O'Hare.
Almost
made it.
Just a passport away.
Unbelievable. Just in case you don't already know this and you like to travel, check your passport. Make sure that you have at least 6 months of passport validity left on that thing, because
it sort of depends. My understanding at this point, which is still vague because mostly I just saw red the whole time.
Still mad.
I'm still a little upset, except I played it real cool, Jordy. I did a good job.
I would like to thank our missed vacation on Xanax, whoever makes Xanax.
Yeah, Xanax.
Xanax, if you're out there, we'd love a sponsorship from you again. But yeah, Buster, you did good.
Long story short, this is what happened.
You were helped.
I was helped by Xanax. We got to the airport, and a lot of things happened. Our flight was supposed to be on British Air. It got kicked off to American Air. We had to deal with a bunch of things. We had to figure out where our seats were, blah, blah, blah.
To refill out every form.
Refill out different forms, locator forms for like COVID and just tons of shit like
that.
Insane. And we finally were like, okay, you guys are ready. Let's get this done. They scan Jordy's passport. Then they scan my passport. Then they scan my friend Kelly Galassi's passport. And they say, her passport has expired. And we're like, well, no, it's not. It expires
clearly,
in March of...
It's clearly not expired.
March of 2022. It's January. And then we're informed that if you go to Portugal, you have to have at least 3 months left on your passport. Otherwise, you can't come in. Some countries, it's 6 months. I had no idea.
None of us had any
idea that that was the case.
I've done a fair bit of traveling overseas, as have you. And I've never encountered anything like that. I guess maybe I've just always traveled in the meat of my passport
sure.
validity or whatever, somewhere in that 9.5 years.
Right.
We were, to say the least, shell-shocked. And after getting tossed around about 18 different service counters in the ticketing portion of O'Hare... Crushing a bunch of mini bottles of Prosecco from the little grocery store and trying not to freak out.
On the phone with British Air on hold for 45 minutes until I talked to the woman for an additional 45 minutes.
So we get to this point where we sit down and we're like, all right, what are the options?
We are resigned that we're not going to Portugal at this point.
But the UK does not have these passport restrictions. So we think... You know what? We already have a trip booked. We have to go to London anyway. We're going to stop in London on a layover. Maybe we should just go to the UK, drink some sparkling wine, maybe take the train up to Scotland, drink some whiskey. I don't know. I mean, it could have been an interesting trip. And after you were on hold with this lovely lass from British Airways... We had to rebook our flight from Chicago to London to a later flight.
She canceled all the flights, refunded the money, and
which
said,
was cool.
And it was cool. It was I don't know how cool it was. It was
not
fair.
Cool.
It was fair. And fuck her, to be totally honest. Then she tells me this.
Yeah.
Then she tells me this. Okay, then let's book a flight to just to London. Okay, sure. That'll be $3,000 per person one way.
Yeah.
And that's when
I said...
Do you know
how many British pounds sterling that is?
And that's when I said, pardon me? And yeah. She repeated it, and I said, okay, well, you're going to have a nice day because I know that I'm not going to. Goodbye.
Yeah. So we ended up going out and having a really nice dinner in Chicago.
We did. And we rolled to Chinatown the next day.
Yep, we crushed it. I took a little side trip to Italy. I mean, Italy. it's not the same, but, you know, you make the most of things when you can. And honestly, I was pleasantly surprised at the three of us just kind of being like, cool, man, well, let's check out hotels in London. Let's see if we can get one. And it was like, who knows, man? Maybe something cool would have happened. Probably not, but who knows? Either way, we're not in Portugal right now. No, we're not. We're in...
Live from Studio V.
We're live from Studio V.
I'll tell you what, yeah. Though. We have a guest with us. Call him Jacobs. Stan Jacobs is here.
Hey, what's up?
So I've been holding my tongue this whole time.
Yeah, you also had an interesting vacation recently.
I did. I'm really impressed with your, you know, adulting that you've been able to do and really be able to calm the inner Buckster and not just annihilate somebody. Because I was like, I can't imagine my travels with Micah and have him just normally react to something like this.
Honestly, I was almost certain that he was going to
full Buckster
threaten the queen or
Kelly has known me for
destroy the monarchy or something.
Kelly has known me 25 years. Jordan's known me a solid 10 plus. Like, I think they were both and I have to say I was fairly impressed with myself. Yeah, like
just kept
being like
them beers.
Like okay, well, that sounds good. What can we do about this? And
yeah, I mean,
Jordan and Kelly, I think. Their jaws were on the ground in terms of like, that dude is being so cool right now.
Yeah. Because
he could be such a fucking dick.
I was like, we gotta give this guy Xanax for the whole vacation. That's my solution.
I had four and I hadn't even left the fucking, like, I hadn't even gone through security yet. So Xanax is 100% responsible for my chillness.
It's a wonder drug.
It is.
It really is. I mean, I've traveled with you a couple of times now to New York City, and Xanax has gotten you to New York and from New York back to Milwaukee. But to see you react this way, I mean, dude, I'm proud of you. That's super awesome.
It also, one time, allowed me to have a conversation with a window.
Yep.
Even though I thought it was you.
Yep. Yep. Yep, and you also, do you remember like, there was a woman with a peanut allergy?
Yeah.
And, like, it was not a big deal. Like, did he really want peanuts? Like, he didn't, did you actually want peanuts? Because you made a really big deal about how, well, thanks a lot, now none of us can have peanuts
right.
for the whole
well,
flight.
Well, there was, like, an announcement. It was like, okay, it was...
What is this, a Curb episode?
There was this announcement that it was like, and there will not be nuts served because there is a peanut allergy on board. And I was just like, oh, great. Talking to this woman essentially next to me.
Right.
I'm like, oh, great. Some asshole. Right, some asshole has a peanut allergy. Now I can't have any. That sucks. I mean, it really sucks, but whatever. I'll be fine. But really, can't they just handle it? Like, what do you think about this? And she's like, it's me. I was like, oh. I was like, oh, well, we're fine over here. No big deal. I'll just get a drink. And
like, fuck you, Larry.
I'll be passed out in like 5 minutes.
It was so good. Yeah. It was so good. I mean, I think this is naturally the time of year that like we as hospitality people take our vacations.
Slow.
Cold. It's quiet. It's cold. You just got, you know, your ass is kicked from, you know, a busy holiday season.
Right.
Well, some of us did. Some of us did not have a busy holiday season due to the cron. You know, it was maybe that was also like that was also a good reason to go on vacation. It was just like, you know, just need a break.
We've had just a really crazy mental gymnastics mm-hmm. past couple of years.
No, and it was nice. Like, so me and my partner Dan, my wife Kate, his girlfriend Sarah, and our two friends from Chicago.
It's funny to hear Nardi referred to as
Sarah,
not as Sarah, as Dan Van Wright's girlfriend.
Live in common law. I mean, I don't know how would
at
you
this
put
point,
this
common law.
Common law for sure.
For sure.
I mean, they've dated longer than I've known my wife, who I've been married to for 5 years and dated for 4 years. So
yeah, no, I don't. Yeah,
his girlfriend, was, right?
Yep, his girlfriend Sarah, also the only one that came back unscathed from Mexico. But we went to go see Dead & Company's Playing in the Sand, which is like their big. resort weekend. They have three shows on the beach. You know, all of the women that went with us had zero interest in seeing any sort of concerts. They are all pretty much hate the Grateful Dead, but love us. So that was nice of them to like agree to come with. But they basically got
a very
nice
strange
little
Venn diagram. But I'm
Now, but you know, so like leading up to it, it was always kind of like, I really feel like they're gonna cancel this, or this is gonna get canceled. And there were multiple times where I think they could have canceled this, and I think everybody would have been like, okay, well, whatever, let's go do something else. Instead, they didn't cancel it. They went ahead the night before. John Mayer, who plays the Jerry Garcia parts, said that he was not going to be able to make it because he had COVID. So that was already like not a great omen. You know, we get on the plane, go there, get to the resort, which is also like, it's a hurdle. We get to the pool and then, you know, find out about 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the first day. And before that, we got to the pool, we actually walked where the stage is at and looked, and we're like, this doesn't feel ready. Like, this doesn't feel very set up for some place that's going to have a concert in a day.
Yeah.
So we were hanging out at the pool, having some drinks, and then they announced that they were going to cancel. They did, however, come through very nicely and cover the cost outside of our airfare for the trip. So basically we ended up getting like a free vacation, which was nice. And I have to admit, it was an awesome vacation regardless. Like, we still had a lot of fun. The ladies had a lot of fun. I think they enjoyed it because we were definitely around more and not a bunch of zonked out zombies.
You were disappointed that the show wasn't happening. I mean, it was
sure.
The whole point of...
Sure.
Was that disappointment for you... like on equal footing as at some point in your 30s or 40s that you realized that you were looking forward to seeing John Mayer perform? Or was there a wrong turn that happened somewhere in your life, Dan?
Don't get me wrong. I'm not a big fan of John Mayer. In fact, my friend Jason likes to say I have Tourette's during concerts when I start screaming about fuck you, John Mayer. And, you know, but it the guy is a really good guitarist. I give it to that. I personally, like, I don't know, man. It's like trying to be... It's the closest representation that you can get to what I guess the Grateful Dead used to be as far as musical wise, and then you also get those good vibes of the crowd, which is something I don't think you get in any other sort of environment. The only thing I can compare it to, and this is coming from a Bears fan, going to Lambeau and having that experience where everybody's pulling in the same direction, and you have like
everybody sharing their cheese curds with each other, man, passing them around.
It really is kind of beautiful. If I wasn't a Bears fan, I would be like, man, this is pretty cool. Like I dig this whole, you know, this whole like just family atmosphere and camaraderie and just like a genuine like niceness of people. And I think you only get that. That's the only thing I can compare that experience to.
What's the demographic kind of breakdown at a Dead show these days? Like, is it like younger people or people like, I feel like people our age in our 40s are probably like the younger people or something. I mean,
you still have kids. I mean, it was like there was when we went to Wrigley, later in the summer? I think it was in September or like end of summer. There you definitely had the older crowd, like people our parents' age. And then you had people our age, and we were kind of we're distinctly in the middle. And then you do have the young kids, you know, and I think that's. You know, that was one of the things that, you know, that the playing in the sand, because it's just, I think the sheer cost of it kind of like knocks out some of the younger kids and some of the riffraff that also like you don't have like Nitrous Mafia and like really just, you know, shitty people involved.
It actually takes a fair amount of planning to travel overseas to go see a concert of any kind or do anything.
Sure.
As well as cost. So
it takes a fair amount of planning to do any travel outside of the country at this point with COVID.
Yeah.
I just remember the days that I thought it was a big deal. Like when Katie and I went to Paris, it's like, okay, you have your passport? Okay, cool. Got your passport.
That's it.
All right, good. You sure? Got it. Okay, good.
Check
now
your shoe.
Now it's literally like 45 fucking other things that you need to have. Locator forms, double vaccinations, COVID test negatives.
Yep.
It's just like, fuck me. And I'm glad that that's the case, But it also sucks.
In Mexico, there's
a pain in the ass
on the left. It is. It sucks.
In Mexico, there's a whole industry that popped up because you have to get, you have to have a negative antigen test before you can get back to the United States. So there's a whole industry that popped up in these, you know, in towns like Tulum, where you know, like the you know, the Airbnb person isn't going to do this for you. So it's like $50 to get an antigen test and like $120 for a PCR. And yeah, double that if you get to Cancun Airport and you still haven't gotten your results yet or forgot to do it.
Yeah. When we left Spain, we had to find a little like clinic in San Sebastian, and it was like $50 a person.
Yeah.
But I remember like taking that, getting that test and like going, getting some coffee and sitting at a table and just being like, oh shit. I wonder if we were cautious enough, and it was fine. But yeah, I mean,
there is a nerve wracking like period there that it's
it
like,
is,
oh, yeah.
And even for somebody like, all right, so me and Kate, we had COVID during Christmas, and so we're
me
in that
too, man.
We're in that golden like spot where we could pretty much do anything. Like I'm invincible. I could like share drinks with people. I could share joints with people again.
I can shoot a man on Madison Avenue. No one's gonna stop me.
So you know, it's I even though I shouldn't test positive, you know, it's still nerve wracking. You're still sitting there in this room like, all right, well, if we don't, like, that, when I'm stuck here at this resort. Also, like, I hate all-inclusives. Like, I'm going to go on the record. I mean, it's fun for, like, a day or two, but, like, I don't know, man. It's just garbage.
Yeah, the other thing with my friend Kelly that also played a big part was that she had COVID in around Thanksgiving. And she tested positive for the Binex Now, like, telemed test. She tested positive, and my wife is an NP, and my wife knew that she had COVID in
in
November, that you can test positive because there are still some protein fragments left in your nasal cavity, whatever.
They call them protfrags.
Protfrags. And yeah. So Katie wrote this long letter, you know, that was, you know, an official letter, a real letter. She wasn't trying to fuck anybody or lie to anybody.
Well, she's
about
an official person.
She's an official person.
Yeah, professional.
The night before, I was talking to Kelly, and she was very nervous about the whole thing. And I was like, listen, why don't you take the test again? Who knows? Maybe it'll come up negative. So she literally shoved, like, enemas into her nose, then did the test, and it came back negative. And at that point, we were like, we're in for sure. No problem.
Yeah.
We're going to Portugal.
I literally, on my calendar at home, when I first had the dates of the trip, I literally wrote down Jordan in Portugal ? And because I mean,
so many variables.
Anything in these COVID times is a bit uncertain.
Yeah.
I did admittedly, when I got back, I started booking trips like a crazy person.
We did too, which is funny. I felt incredibly safe though at the airports. Like I have to admit, like for the most part, like airport, plane, like I felt as safe as I could be. People, I would say 95% of people were wearing masks. You're gonna have the 5% who just don't give a fuck.
Right.
And like that's pretty much the case.
I saw an asshole wearing a mask. I went to Atlanta for a couple of days right after Portugal. And there was a guy wearing a Let's Go Brandon mask. I was like, get the fuck out of here. Like this is a grown-ass man. This dude was like 55, 60 years old wearing a Let's Go Brandon mask.
Here's the thing. The red team always calls the blue team snowflakes.
Right.
But these people can't even get the cojones together
to just say
fuck Biden.
Right.
Like, just put it on a shirt.
Right. For those of you who don't know, let's go, Brandon. Is
everybody
code
knows.
For, I don't know if they do.
No,
maybe.
No, not everybody knows, because literally I was at the Bears Packer game at Lambeau, and I was like, who the hell is Brandon? Why
right.
Did, like,
let's go, Brandon. Is there's this NASCAR
Brandon's gonna
thing?
Brandon's going to score 69 touchdowns today.
This NASCAR thing that has to do with essentially it's code for go fuck Biden or Biden go fuck yourself or fuck Joe Biden or whatever the fuck it means.
Well, because this Brandon dude won a race. And everyone behind him was saying, fuck Joe Biden, like when he was getting interviewed. And his PR team was like, oh, yeah, I don't know. We didn't hear that. I think everyone was just cheering for Brandon. I think they were all saying, let's go, Brandon.
Right, right.
And so the red team.
That's fucking
still,
it, Hicks.
Like, you can. I just, you know what? Like, you, Just say it. Just swear. Yeah. Everybody swears.
Well,
you know,
not Jesus.
It feels good though.
You know, just try it. I know that if Trump said it, it would be on all the shirts as just fuck Biden or whatever.
Yeah.
It would be okay if Trump did it and all the pastors would agree and everything would be all fine. Swearing would be cool.
Don't you find these guys that wear the Trump mask, though? Because there was a guy on our airplane who was wearing the Trump mask, and he was literally just looking around, waiting for somebody to engage with him. Like, yeah. That's all he's doing. He was the only one. He was wearing a mask that said something about Trumping, and, like, his eyes just, like, kept looking around, darting around, like, looking at people, trying to engage with somebody. Because all he wants to do
You got a problem with me?
Seriously. That was it. And it's just, like, it seems so... to me, it's just like, dude, like, I'm not going to try and explain what my thought is to you. Like, I don't...
Well, yeah.
I don't care.
You're sort of irrelevant to me, dude.
Yeah.
I don't care anymore.
Yeah. So, anyway, people, let's go, Brandon.
Vacations.
Vacations. It's all I ever wanted.
Sorry, man. They're coming for, like, they're coming up again. Like,
yeah.
Like you said, you booked a bunch. Like,
I booked a trip to San Francisco.
Hell yeah.
Nice. Brandis, my partner loves this particular podcast called Sexy Unique Podcast, and they. Basically, like, they commentate on Bravo shows, like reality shows. And I went to a live episode with her in Chicago several months ago. And I don't watch these shows, but it was pretty funny. The hosts are pretty engaging. But yeah, they're doing a set in San Francisco, so we're flying out there. It's around our anniversary, and I'm gonna go visit Jerry Garcia's house.
Yeah,
and you know.
As one does.
Make the pilgrimage.
And ask what the rent is.
I'd be like, wow, I can't believe Jerry could afford that, man.
I can't even imagine what rent is now, because I was like, in 1999, 2000, rent in the Mission District for one bedroom was $1,900.
My sister lived in San Francisco proper. She now lives in one of the suburbs across the bay. They had a three-bedroom house about a block and a half away from Ghirardelli Chocolate or Ghirardelli Square or whatever it's called. And it's been about 5 years since they've lived there. And I think they were paying $4,500, $5,000 a month for rent. They now have three kids. And even across the bay, I want to say that they pay in the neighborhood of $3,000 plus for like daycare. A month.
Yeah.
It's like my mortgage times two, just for the kids. Not even touching any other bills.
That's just crazy. I mean, we've talked about this. Like, Milwaukee is like one of the greatest parts about living in the city is the fact of using it as a home base.
You can travel.
Yep. It allows you to do things that you normally wouldn't do because the cost of living here is so cheap. Kind of. I mean, it's getting more expensive, and the cost of living is definitely going up, and you're starting to see it in neighborhoods, especially.
Let's go, Brandon.
Maybe.
sorry.
Oh, hey, whoa.
Wait a second.
Dan, speaking of Milwaukee, I'm going to do a hard segue here into some of the work that you've been doing during the pandemic. When this stuff all kind of dropped into our laps in March and April of 2020.
Hold on for 1 second.
What?
Do people know who Dan Jacobs is? As a proprietor of Dan okay. and
I think we did that, but maybe we didn't.
I don't think we did.
No, I don't think we did. But okay. I mean, it's also like I don't really care.
Dan Jacobs is the co-chef, co-owner of Dan Dan and
Fool's Errand and Esther Ev.
He is a former second place finisher on Beat Bobby Flay, which I think only had two contestants.
I fucking beat that guy. I fucking beat that guy. That was a lot of, man, I made my own noodles. That motherfucker had cast iron woks that they just pulled out of nowhere. I had unseasoned woks that had never been used before. Like, there was a lot of things that, like, I found to be, like, a little skeptical about that.
Well, you know,
whatever, man.
I don't know if I'd make a show about having people challenge me, and then
it's also called
not
beat
rig it.
Flay.
He's
know,
one.
Yeah. He's not easy to beat.
He's one of the restaurant dudes. Him and his partner are big names in this industry, and we're lucky enough, Jordan and I, to call them friends. I've known Jacob since I don't know, we didn't know each other in Chicago, but we knew each other. We had a beer together.
It was super weird. So Micah worked at a bar that my wife did nails at during It was like ladies' night, like half off martinis, and we'd watch Project Runway.
It was half off Cosmos, and we would maybe Project Runway was there, but it was one of the last seasons of the Sarah Jessica Parker show.
Sex in the City.
Sex in the City, and yeah. She would do nails.
And just like that,
Jacobs would come in have a couple beers or drinks, and I don't know, I was probably working the door and be like, hey, what's up, dude, or you know, whatever the fuck. And then years later, I think you walked into Hinty for a stage. Or something to that effect.
I applied to work at Hinterland when I first moved here. I'm from Chicago. Moved here like 11 years ago. Me and Kate were on some great adventure to just move to a place that we knew nobody, but also close enough that if things didn't go well, we could easily kind of slink back to Chicago.
Right.
And so we moved here. I opened up Dick's Pizza and Pleasure, which was
love Dick's.
Let's go, Dick's.
It was a good pizza. It was good pizza. The one thing I liked about that, wow. The one thing I got out of that was I got a week long stage at in California at Nancy Silverton's pizza place, Moza, which was
not bad.
I think the coolest part of that whole thing. It didn't really work out, and so I had applied to work at Hinterland. I also applied to be Paul Zirkle's sous chef at the time at Roots. And it basically came to those two jobs, and it was also funny, Matt Curley was also applying for the same position that I was applying for at the time. And so I ended up taking the job at Roots, but me and I would always hang out. We would go into Hinterland to hang out, and I think it was around the time when, you know, I think like-minded restaurant people really started to kind of get together in the city.
Right.
And like,
agree.
You know, trade ideas and collaborate on dinners together. And it was kind of a real cool, I mean, it still is. It still is. But it was like at that time, it was a real cool, magical time. And
if you want to learn more about that, you can listen to episode 2, Too Cool for Portland, starring Paul Zirkle.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Cool. Well, you talked a little bit about that. Yeah, I know. It's cool. I mean, we look back on those times very fondly. And
yeah.
I think it was a really cool, creative community.
It was definitely a renaissance for Milwaukee food that kind of switched it from some of the old sort of German restaurants. Then it switched it kind of from like the Bartolotta and really gave rise to the independent restaurants in the city, which is exactly, I think, where Jordan was trying
to go
with this.
That's a great segue. Yes, well,
I'm not here just for my good looks.
Man, that was tight.
That's fucking radio, boys.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Oh, man.
So, as I was saying, Dan... when COVID hit, none of us knew what the hell was going on. There was very little guidance for restaurants or
there was
public
none. There
places.
Was none.
Zero.
I mean, there's a vacuum of leadership. And I remember fielding some emails and calls from you and some other folks about like, hey, what are you guys doing? How do we, you know, have some solidarity here? What's going on? And you were probably the main person who kind of spearheaded this independent restaurant coalition here in Milwaukee, which I'm assuming kind of dovetails into like the broader independent restaurant coalition.
Yeah.
But what has it been like for you as a guy who owns a couple of restaurants and really kind of, I think was, I think at that time you were kind of working like, you know, balls to the wall, just like going. And then, and I mean, a lot of us were too. And it's just when things just stop, you're like, "Well, shit."
You were working on the IRC. You were working on Dan Dan and trying to figure out what the fuck was going to happen there and how it was going to continue. You were closing Fauntleroy and opening Fool's Errand. I guess that was a little later, but I mean, you had your hands full of a lot of shit at a point that all of us were in a mental state that was not the best, say the least.
I mean, it was super weird. I don't think anybody there still is no right answers to like most of these things that I think independent restaurants and bars kind of face. In March of 2020, you know, restaurants basically closed overnight. You know, it was like, all right, we're not going to be doing, restaurants and bars were like, all right, we're not, like, that's it. We're not having anybody in. So now we have to pivot to to-go. Luckily, Dan Dan had, you know, we'd been doing to-go for like 3 years or 4 years at that point. So there was a to-go like model there. It was also outside of pizza. Like Chinese food is probably like the second or first thing that people go to when they want to-go food.
Sure.
But early on in March, like when it first, like when it first happened, I was sick, and I'm pretty sure I had COVID. But this is also at a time when you couldn't get tested. Like I coughed for about 6 weeks, and so I was actually at home for a lot of this. And I think that being at home, trying to manage the restaurant from home, ineffectively, you know, left gaps in my ability or in like what I could do. And I think that's when I was on like a text thread, you know, just on a regular text thread. I was on an email thread. I was on a, you know, a Facebook Messenger thread. I was on an Instagram
Slack
thread.
Line. Yeah.
There was like all these things going on at the same time. And I think the initial idea of Merck, you know, this came about before I think I knew anything about a broader sense of an independent restaurant coalition. We kind of like, we're like, all right, let's, I think it was me, you, John Revord, really kind of were like, let's just get it all onto one thing so that we can just kind of have like some communication with one thing and try and, you know, organize ourselves so that we can effectively, you know, try and figure out how to do this. Cause none of us knew what we were doing. And that, and the, like you said, there was like a vacuum of leadership.
Well, it was also like a thing where it was like, okay, if one or two restaurants in town aren't playing with us, then the people who don't care about COVID-19 are just going to go there. And these guys are going to like potentially make a bunch of money while the rest of us suffer. So how do we have some parity in the landscape?
Right. At that time, responsibility was costing a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Being responsible. Yeah. I mean, it was also like, you know, we're still paying our staff like at the time. Cause we also, at the time, I mean, this was supposed to be, I remember talking to somebody who was telling me this is going to be like, this is going to be like a deep V. We're going to be closed for a couple, like 6-8 weeks. And then we're going to come back robust by summertime. That really hasn't quite happened. And it's been more of like a deep U that just seems to be unending, with an occasional, like maybe bump here or there. So, you know, we put together Merck just, I think, initially to kind of figure out ways to kind of keep us all going. We raised a bunch of money for Caitlin Cullen and her, at the time, restaurant. I'm blanking the name. Tandem. Thank you. To supply meals for people, for community meals. And then we raised a bunch of money so that she would then pay restaurants to then provide these meals, which kind of was a lifeline for some of us at the time. So I think that's initially how it started, and then it became political. And if you would have told me 3 years ago that I would be involved in any sort of politics whatsoever, I think that would be crazy. It would be a crazy thought. But it wasn't.
Speaking of Let's Go Brandon, you actually got to meet Brandon.
I got
Vice, or President Brandon.
I got to meet then President-elect Joe Biden and have a conversation with him and kind of tell him the plight of the independent restaurants. And, you know,
if you could go back and have that conversation again or have a second conversation, what would you tell him today?
I mean, to tell you the truth, I don't think I would tell him anything different. Like, we're in a worse place now than I think we were in March of 2020, because you had all these things on the horizon. Let's even take January of 21. So, you know, going into January of 21, going out of, like, 2020, that October, November, December was the worst numbers I've ever seen at Dan Dan ever. Like,
hold on. What? This is 2021.
So January of 2021, so going into January of 2021, so you have October, November, and December of 2020, we probably lost $120,000, something insane like that. I mean, it was, and I'm going to be honest with you, because I also think the days of restaurant owners trying to say like, oh man, everything's good, we're killing it. It's, I think we should all just be more honest with ourselves and be more honest to each other.
Yeah.
And be like, hey man, well, I'm not killing it. Like, things suck. Like, it's it's not great out here.
Yeah.
So we, you know, but we knew that PPP was coming at the end of January. And so, like, we're like, okay, so we just got to, like, tough guy it out a couple more weeks. And we know that this will come along. This is going to help us. Well, now there's no government funding. There's no nothing. There's no EIDLs. There's no PPP. There's no There's no employee retention credits. And the RRF was grossly underfunded from the beginning, which is the Restaurant Revitalization Fund that the IRC pretty much like singularly focused to kind of get that passed. You know, and it's tough because I think now is when you're going to start to see smaller restaurants that weren't able to take part in any of these programs or weren't able to take full effects of these programs are going to start closing. And I think that's the sad part. You know, independent restaurants not only act as economic engines for their community, but they are also the gateway to how we get to know a community. Like independent restaurants, or how you learn about an ethnic group is traditionally first time through their food.
Right.
And I think if you start taking those things away and you start replacing it with things like Applebee's or Red Lobster or like whatever, you know, name that your like generic
when
thing.
When I first moved here, probably, I don't know, 15 years ago, I spent a lot of time trying to get to know people at TGIF. And what was going on is that you really didn't have... Somebody was supposed to laugh at that point.
I was like, for a second, I'm like, wait a minute, what does TGIF stand for?
Never mind.
Like, in the Perfect Strangers era or the Family Matters era? That's what I was thinking about. Like,
talking about the wing joint, dude. Yeah. Thank God it's Friday.
But it's just one of those things where, like, you know, I think now is when you're going to see places close, and I think that's the real sad part because this is 100% preventable.
If you go to, like, any American city, top 50 largest cities in America, you see, like crumbling infrastructure, generally speaking, and whatever. But like, America, one of the cool things that America has is food. Like... If you go to Portugal, let's say,
absolutely, I do exactly,
and you're like, if you end up in Portugal with a good passport, and you're there, and you're like, man, you know what, I could really go for some Chinese food. It's not going to be that great. Just telling you,
it's not true because Portugal was into the Macau and the Hong Kong.
Okay,
era.
Maybe that's a bad example.
It was a horrible example.
But I remember on my 31st birthday, I was in Istanbul, and I really wanted Chinese food. And I went to this Chinese restaurant.
It was garbage.
It was the worst thing I've ever eaten in my life.
I went to Mexico City. You go to Mexico City, and it's like, hey, this is fun. Eating, crushing Mexican food. And it's like, you know what? I want something other than Mexican food. You can't find it, really.
Yeah, but here, if you go to any major American city, you can generally find some decent cuisine, some ethnic cuisine from almost anywhere around the world. Yeah. And we are in danger of losing that identity as a country and that I guess just that kind of like little niche that makes this place cool. And it's because like what you said, a lot of this revitalization fund was grossly underfunded. The people that are affected the worst, in fact, are probably the really small mom and pop ethnic first generation.
They need the help the most.
And if those places die, that was an ill-timed phone ring. But if those places go away, this country, what else do we have, man?
Well, right. I mean, it's like when
NASCAR
when the first PPPs dropped, and like Ruth's Chris. Got like, or was it
$20 million?
It was like millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Even the LA Lakers got like $80 billion. Yeah.
Right. It's just bizarre. And I think, in a more broad sort of sense, it really speaks to how fucked up politics are in this country. That all of these restaurants that the survive, like millions of Americans. I'm sure you probably have a pretty good idea of the number of people in Milwaukee that work in this business. I mean, it has to be tens of thousands of people.
It is. I mean, you look at the country as a whole, there's 11 million people that work in food and beverage, whether it's front of house, back of house, some sort of hospitality, restaurants and bars, independent places. This doesn't even include the places. This doesn't include fast food. This doesn't include
TGIF or Applebee's or any of those places.
Doesn't include any of those places.
Just independent restaurants. Just 11 million people
work in them. These are people's first, a lot of times it's people's first jobs and their last jobs in the workforce. And then on top of that, you have about another 5 million ancillary jobs just on the outside, whether they're farmers, butchers, delivery drivers, whatever. All these people kind of, this is what creates this crazy large like economic ecosystem that restaurants basically prop up. On top of that, restaurants are the only, this is the only industry where 90 cents of every dollar goes directly right back out the door into the economy, whether in the form of wages or, you know, where we pay our bills to other companies that then, you know, use that money to then pay their wages and blah, blah, blah. So it really is in the government's best interest to keep us going. And yet somehow this has been like a fight tooth and nail the whole time to prove like our, you know, what we are. Like what we are to the economy,
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We were lucky enough to be the beneficiaries of some of the larger grants, and that money that we were granted literally went straight into small businesses around the city of Milwaukee's pockets. You know, whether it was building our patio, getting every aspect of this place, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that grant, period, end of sentence. And what it did, not only did we get this money in, but we dispersed this money. Like you said, I mean, 90% of the money went out to other small businesses.
Yeah. It's frustrating that things like this get politicized. Viruses get politicized.
Now we have to fucking deal with Joe Manchin, and like that's the big thing, and nobody cares about fucking restaurants anymore because Joe Manchin doesn't want to be a part of like whatever. It's just a sick sort of I don't know, acknowledgement of what politics in this country is, that it's really not set up to help people, to protect people, to help them to be there when the shit hits the fan. In my mind, it's like, well, we'll always have the government to help bail us out. And it's just not fucking true.
It could. The money's there.
They've chosen not to.
The money is there. The help isn't really there.
We're going to spend close to $1 trillion on, you know, on weapons. Yeah. Whereas, like, we can't. And that's the other thing.
Because all the ones that they had last year have gone bad.
It's so bizarre when you start talking about in billions, it's unfathomable to me, like that amount of money, like that, the amount of money that we're talking about here is just crazy to talk about. Like it's
yeah.
So if you take 1 million seconds, it's like 11 days or something like that. But if you take 1 billion seconds, it's 32 years.
Right. I remember seeing that.
The economies of scale are hard to digest for, anybody, really. The human brain doesn't really work like that.
So here's a number that I think everybody can kind of understand. 3,000 plus restaurants in the state of Wisconsin did not receive RRF grants in the first round. And these are some of the most vulnerable places that were supposed to be protected. So originally when the piece of legislation was written, we were protecting women-owned, minority-owned, and veteran-owned businesses. They were supposed to have the first crack at the money. And I was being none of these things. I was 100% behind this because I felt like that was the right way to do this. Like this is the most responsible right way to do this. And instead, you know, those people got pushed to the back, which historically they always get pushed to the back. And now we're stuck in this place where like those are the people that are going to end up closing their restaurants, places they've worked at forever, or just struggling to have to work day in, day out, man. I mean, we have friends here in the city that literally they can't afford another employee, so they're basically working their restaurant kitchens by themselves and just trying to stay alive.
We were doing that here for quite a while until Guthrie joined us, and I mean, it was, yeah, to work at a place 10, 11 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Yeah, man.
We have kids at home. It's like, dude, there's no way that I can keep this up If I was 24, maybe. I haven't been 24 for a long time.
Going back to November, December of 2020, and then like January of 2021, that's when we had converted into a shop. And we thought that we were doing okay because people were coming in and buying stuff. But the markup and everything like that is so different. And after looking at the numbers after a couple of months, it was like, Jordan, we're fucked.
We're dying. Yep.
We're fucked.
And we're selling booze.
Yeah. I think
in Milwaukee.
I think in January or February, we kind of made the decision that we have to reopen. At this point, people were just starting to get vaccinated. Vaccines were becoming more available. But I think that last month that we were just a shop, I think that month we took in total $6,000.
Yeah, it was rough.
That's brutal.
It was so bad.
Yeah. I think our bills were $12,000 that month.
Yeah.
Let's never go back there.
It's funny though, because I think we've all kind of learned stuff from this. And I think one of the things, you know, is working smarter, not harder, is really to invest in the people that make it possible for us to do our business. And you know, I love hospitality. I love restaurants. If I didn't, there's no way I would have be still doing this. I think the last 2 years would have basically just ended that. But we have to invest in our future. I mean, I really feel like, we have a chance to really kind of reinvent how we want to do things.
That's definitely, and I think we talked about it briefly before we started recording. It's maybe one of the positives that has come out of COVID. We were talking about 11 Madison Park.
Yeah, going like reverting.
Reverting back. But one of the things that, you know, as a guy that has traditionally worked in the back of the house, it always really chapped my hide that, you know, servers were out there. And I remember one server in particular coming back to the pass at Hinterland and being like, I only made like $300 tonight. That sucks so bad.
Oh, man.
As I was getting paid like $9 an hour and sweating my ass off over a 700-degree grill. I wanted to tell her things like, go fuck yourself.
Things like, let's go, Brandon.
I think I maybe actually probably did. But I think one of the positive things that came out, at least in some restaurants, was an understanding of the dynamic of what a restaurant is, that the guys in the back and women in the back of the house are just as important as the guys and the women in the front of the house. And there seemed to be some sort of parity.
It's a team effort. Like there's not like, you don't have one without the other. Like you can't, like you go into a restaurant for the whole package experience. Like when I go into a restaurant, I want to, you know, be taken care of. I want to eat good food. I want to have a nice time.
Right.
But that's a whole package experience. That's
you can't just go to a restaurant and have really good service and shit food.
Or vice versa.
Right.
I'm not going to just go to a restaurant and have really good food.
Food is outstanding, but it came out in 3 hours and the fucking server was a fucking dick. Let's go back.
Yeah, no, man. So you got to have both. And I think that understanding was tough. And you know, we moved to a service fee-based system at all of our restaurants this summer, or summer 2021. And a friend of mine in New York said this to me, and I think this completely rings true. You're going to lose some really good people along, you know, by doing this. Like, it's inevitable. People are not going to understand what this is. They're going to be like, well, I'm not going to make as much money. I'm out of here. Or I have to work more in order to make that money. But you're going to gain people that believe in what you're doing. And I think that was something that, you know, that was something that we were able to do, was to gain the people that believe in what we're doing. And I think we're stronger as a team across the board because of it.
And not to sound like a total commie, but the group mentality that we are in this together. And you know what? I am going to take it in the butt a little bit, and I'm not going to make as much money, but this guy's going to make a little more money, and it's going to be better for the group, for the collective.
Yeah. And it's going to, but I mean, all right. So we've had servers who have been, I've had, you know, we've been lucky enough to have a staff for the most part, you know, has been with us through a lot of things. You know, I've had people working front and back of the house that have, you know, been with me and Dan through multiple restaurants.
Do you have original cast at Dan? Anybody in the original cast?
Tina. Hungerford, kind of, because like he came on a little bit after we opened up.
Tina's still there?
Yeah. Tina. I think Tina's the only, I think Tina might be the only OG, like, original staff member still, like, from the beginning. Abel's back, so, but he's come and gone. We've had so many people come and go. That's the other thing, too. Is like
Jordan. Jordan worked there for a minute.
Jordan worked there. You worked there.
I worked there, too. Like,
We've had kind of, but we've always had people come, you know, leave and then come back. And I think that's a testament to, you know, some of the, like, the, some of what me and Dan have built, like the, just the, everything about the restaurant, you know, like they always talk about with sports teams. And I always feel like restaurants are very sports kind of related, but you know, there's something about building that, like, you know, locker room, building that sort of organization mentality where, you know, everybody's pulling in the same direction. And I think me and Dan also are owners that, you know, directly, you know, do that. We're not absent owners. We're
You're owners that are there all the time. You were owners that, you know, were dishwashers and then line cooks. And then, you know what? You guys have been there. It's not like, oh, my dad's rich and now I have a restaurant kind of thing.
Hey, you guys got this? Cool. I'm going to go to Mexico.
And if I'm not mistaken, like, you guys would do things like, because there was sort of like supposed to be, you know, you know, pods or like this is the group that were allowed, what were they, like a circle or whatever they called it. You would do things like bring in ping pong tables shit like that so that the crew could hang out and drink some beers after work, but still be around just this core group of people.
Yeah. I mean, again, we had people like we bought into it and like, we're like, all right, we're going to tough guy this out together. Cause we all like at a certain point, it's like, there was no more extended unemployment. You couldn't really live on $300 a week. Like, nobody can. Like, it's ridiculous that that's what unemployment is. You can't live on $300 a week. So it's like, all right, well, let's try and keep this going as much as possible. We had no cases of COVID. We had no cases of COVID from June of 2020 straight through until, like, November of 21.
Wow.
And that was one of those things where, like, because I think we did the right things. Like, we, you know, we always wore masks. We were, you know, smart about staying together. We didn't, you know, put ourselves in, like, compromising situations. And we always talked about that. It's like, hey, guys, I'm not asking you to not go out. I'm just asking you to make smart decisions. Like, realize that your decisions affect everything else around you, including, like, your coworkers. Like, if, you know, you get COVID and pass it on to a bunch of us, it's going to hurt everybody. So, I think that was always great. And then, you know, I mean, I have to admit, these last two variants, Delta and Omicron, there's really not much you could really do. Like, it wasn't, we've done everything. We're boosted, you know, we're 100% vaccinated. It's not like we're, you know, we've done all the things we're supposed to do, and that's, you know,
this is also the natural course of this virus. It's supposed to spread itself more easily, but it's not quite as dangerous.
Yeah,
especially if you're vaccinated.
Theoretically, yes.
So I mean, like, when I got it over Christmas, I was like, damn, like I had a good run. You know, like I did.
Did you feel dirty at first? Because
I felt so dirty.
Yeah, right. I was like, I had to get over that for me.
I was like, there were articles. I'm ashamed.
There were articles in a lot of national publications that, you know, it was sort of like, if you get COVID, don't feel guilty. It's not your fault. You're doing the right things. You've gotten vaccinated. You've been boosted. You're wearing a mask. This shit is contagious as fuck.
Yep. Yeah. It was, but there was a minute there where I felt dirty. And like, speaking of guilt, I think, you know, going back, like we received RRF at both of the restaurants. And I never thought we would. I was always contingency planning.
Cause you talked to Biden.
No, I still have no idea like how the lottery worked, but it was one of those things where like, I never assumed that we would get it. And I was kind of like, making contingency plans for us to not get it.
Right.
With the understanding that I always kind of knew that, like, or like, no matter what, I'm a glass half full sort of guy. Like, I'm always going to be optimistic about these things. And I always believe that, you know, all right, the government's going to do right by us. They're going to refill this thing. But I had serious guilt when we got the RRF, and that's been kind of my guiding, you know, principle since then. I mean, I make phone calls every week to representatives in the state of Wisconsin. not just in the state of Wisconsin, but also Tennessee, North Carolina, Alaska.
On the notes for this show, we'll put some of those numbers down. So,
people
at home want to send emails or call. I think it's important to keep the pressure on these people.
Well, that's the only thing they listen to, man. They only listen to pressure. They don't. We talk about this in leadership meetings. I'm on the leadership committee of the Independent Restaurant Coalition, and we talk about this. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. Like, if we stop talking, if we get, you know, defeated.
Complacent, defeated. Yeah,
but I mean, there's always going to be times where, like, people are going to have to, like, take a step back, and you're going to need to kind of, like gather your juices to get going again. But, like, you got to keep that pressure on them, because that's the only thing politicians listen to is pressure. Like, they don't, I mean, I'm sure they're not all like this, but, like, they don't care unless you're making a big stink.
Yeah, a lot of them are.
Well, we applaud your hard work and your dedication to this, man. And it hasn't gone unnoticed in the city. And I think one of the major reasons, other than us just knowing you for a long time, was to have you on today, was to talk about this stuff. And like I said, we will put down some email addresses and phone numbers for people at home if they want to chime in. And
it takes a minute, man. Takes a minute. All you got to do is be like, man, I want to save restaurants. Please refill the RRF. I mean, there's, if you go to the independentrestaurant.com or saverestaurants.com, there's a whole toolkit on like how to write a letter to your state senator or representative.
They make it pretty easy.
It really does. It's like, it's basically a copy and paste sort of thing. You just put in your information. And whenever I'm talking to a restaurant owner, especially out of state, me calling the senator in North Carolina, he doesn't give a fuck what I think, because I'm not his constituent.
Right.
Like, he doesn't, like, the fact that I even get, like, I can talk to his office, they're just being nice. But I think one of the things, you know, when I've talked to other restaurant owners, was to, you know, tell your story, tell it from your heart. Like, hey, man, this is what I've gone through. This is what I want to go through. Because really, again, this whole time has been like, how do we take care of our team? Because these are the guys that take care of us. And so, like, me and Dan, early on, like, we were made whole, but it was, you know, we didn't take paychecks forever. Like, we didn't take paychecks for, like, most of 2020, because we wanted to make sure that the staff got paid and we could, you know, whatever, like, I'll buy my groceries on a credit card and figure it out later. Because it luckily, again, going back to Milwaukee's a great place to live, because it doesn't really cost that much. Like, I can get by. But, you know, it's important. And I think when you take away restaurants and you don't have these independent restaurants like Odd Duck or Lazy Susan or Voyager or Good Kind or Mothership to go to, like, you take these places away, man, it takes away part of what Bayview is. It takes away.
It takes the mortar out of the brick wall that are our communities. You know, these are places that people, like, they literally bring people together to be a community. And, you know, it's just, yeah, it's important, and it gets lost in all of the politics and all of the other, you know, just, I guess, media talking points and crises around the world. But this one is still happening, and it's happening in your community, no matter where you're listening to this podcast, whether it's here in Milwaukee or beyond. It's happening in your community, and it's something that is of essentially, I mean, life and death importance to many people around you. So make the call, write the email, and go out and eat.
Yeah, man,
a mask on.
I really can't say this enough. Like, independent restaurants and bars need you more than ever right now. Most of us had really shitty Decembers, and I know that January is a typical month where people take dry Januarys or usually stop spending money and going to restaurants.
Do that shit in July.
Yes. Go, like, save some money on restaurants in July. Take a dry July. But, like, go out and, you know, either if you feel uncomfortable going into a restaurant, I completely understand that. I'm not telling you to do it. Go buy to go a couple times a week. Go once, if you feel comfortable, go once a week into your favorite independent restaurant and support them. Because, like, we need your support more than ever. Like, I'm a perpetual optimist, but this is not a good time. Like, it doesn't get any worse than this.
We're done preaching. But I did have a couple other very important questions for Dan here. My main question for you, just on a slightly more serious note, is ranked. I need you to rank these three things for me. Jerry Garcia, Obi-Wan Kenobi, or Chicago Bears quarterback Justin Fields.
Oh, fuck.
And go.
All right, so like, I'm going to kind of work through this in my head a little bit.
I just wanted to touch on all of your nerd.
Yeah,
nerddom,
dude, you nailed some real tough ones here. So I think, you know, just for sheer longevity and what it's meant to me over the course of my entire life, and because I'm planning on getting him tattooed on me, I'm going to go with Obi-Wan Kenobi first and foremost.
I thought for sure you were going to say Fields.
I thought for sure you were going to say Jerry. Damn!
I'm going first and foremost, man. You got to go with, like, Obi-Wan. Like, Star Wars has meant so much to me in the course of my life, and, like, you know, it was a point of, like, it was a point of getting together with my dad. Like, it was how me and my brother, like, we still talk Star Wars shit. Like, we were talking shit about how bad Boba Fett is. Like, I find it to be the, like, just fucking terrible.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's just terrible. It's, like, not good. It's like they're trying to, like, it's another spaghetti western, and it's, but also done in a way that's super poor. I don't know, just bad graphics, bad CGI, like, it's just bad.
What's the one with the little baby Yoda in it?
Mandalorian, which
that,
is awesome.
That shit's
it was
good.
Great. It was awesome. It was also, like, groundbreaking, but then they're just trying to recreate the same thing. Also, why does Boba Fett keep taking his helmet off? Motherfucker never took his helmet off.
That's Boba Fett.
Like, he
man.
Just got it back, and now he's going to take it off all the time?
Boba
like,
Fett was arguably the baddest.
Every time he gave it to somebody to clean it, I'm like, giving his fucking helmet to somebody.
You
like,
want to shine that up for me?
That's not how this works. Boba Fett's not giving his fucking helmet away. All right.
Isn't there a rule about them not taking their helmets off?
There is, but he was never a Mandalorian. He was actually, and neither was his dad, Jango Fett. Jango Fett.
Glyvin.
Sorry, man. This is like, I could. Anyways, so Star Wars has always meant like a shit ton to me. I think I'd then go with Jerry Garcia, and I'm going to explain. Again, it's another way for me to kind of like have a conversation with. All three of these things are ways for me to have a conversation with my dad, which is a whole other subject.
That's a whole other show.
But
yeah,
like,
this is
a whole
other
like, big thing
even.
To unpack. But like,
it's called Daddy Issues.
Yeah, right.
Starring Dan Jacobs.
Totally. but like, it was a way for me and my dad to connect on something, you know, outside of sports. And I think that was outside of sports and you know, television. I think was you know, the Grateful Dead. You know, plus like music is music holds such a large part, I think, in all of our lives.
Music is life, bro.
It does, and it's like, but also like, you know, me and Dan, like, it's something it's how me and Dan sometimes like just get along. Like, it's, I don't know, there's something about that. Now, Justin Fields. Let's.
I first want to send my condolences to you and the entire Bears organization
for a lack of ability
this is,
to
I
form
think,
a good
I think,
organization.
I think this is the 30th restart that I've seen.
So it's the third. It's the third restart since they let Jerry Angelo and Lovie Smith go. Lovie Smith they let go in 2012, but Jerry Angelo was let go in 2011. You know, as an organization, we're a joke, and I think
is it time to like? And I'm not even joking. Should the team just be sold?
It would be. I think if you look at it right now, the guy who's in charge is a McCaskey, and the only great thing that he's done is that he was just genetically a lottery winner. Like
right.
He was just born to a family that happened to own the Chicago Bears. He is the end all be all of all decision making. Yet in a press conference a week ago, he said that he is not a football guy. So why the fuck is he the one making decisions?
I mean, he would be able to sell that team for billions of dollars.
Yeah, especially since, well, I mean, they're going to build a new stadium,
right? Yeah,
they're building a new stadium in Arlington. They bought Arlington Racetrack, the land that's on. They're going to build a new stadium. Whatever. Anyways, off track. So Justin Fields, I think it's hard to
Soldier
to
Field
judge
is
his,
just going
to
be for the dead now.
It's the worst fucking place to see a football game.
But
like,
not the worst place to see the dead play.
Well,
unless you're Jerry.
That's Jerry. That was last place. That was actually my first Grateful Dead show. I was 17.
Too soon, man.
Justin Fields had a typical rookie year. You look at his stats; they were not remarkable. You know, he did make some real big boy throws, and that give you hope for the future. I think he needs to learn to protect his body a little bit better. I think he needs to learn to protect.
I've seen him on some of those scrambles.
He slides like he's sliding into second base, man. Like, put your head down, bro.
Yeah.
Like, you're gonna get You're going to get crushed.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it was all along this whole plan that they had to develop him was never really much of a plan at all. And, you know, I think it showed over the course of the season. So
I think he's going to be a good player. I don't know if he's the answer, but
I do too. I think, you know,
I hope he's not the answer as a Packers fan. Like,
I think the only thing that I have to look forward to is that, you know, and I hope you guys fully appreciate this. I hope you guys appreciate your postseason you're about to experience, because this is the last
Aaron the last time we're going to lose the NFC Championship in a long time.
This is like in my hopes and prayers are that it feels it's almost been unfair as a Bears fan to watch two straight Hall of Fame quarterbacks,
first ballot Hall of Fame quarterbacks for it's been arguably impossible. What 20 years.
Oh, it's like 30 years. It's like 30
almost
plus years,
30
man.
Years.
Like,
is
you
it
go,
really
yo,
that?
1992. Brett Favre started playing for the Packers. He got traded from the Falcons to the Packers for like a third round pick or some shit.
No one even knows.
See, man, I love how I know that.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Just
because your resentment and bitterness.
It really is. It's
so
his,
bold.
I mean, I hate
Packers his first, fans are just like, meh, I don't
his
know.
His
we're
first
good.
Completion was to himself. That should
but
have told you
that,
everything else.
Don't you
about
find that the hubris of the Packers fans? Like, you guys have such like a crazy hubris where, like, you could be down three touchdowns at halftime. You're like, whatever, man, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. That's your answer to everything.
I don't
like,
think
whatever,
that's
man.
Hubris. I think that's hope. And sometimes it's false hope.
Going
hubris. Hubris would be like, dude, we're going to win the Super Bowl this year.
What's really? Because that's basically what most of you are saying right now.
Maybe who I'm not a typical Packers fan. This team, the Packers scare me every week. I'm like, Washington, we could lose to Washington at any moment.
I don't know, man. You guys got a defense.
We played the 49ers that we almost lost to.
We lost to the Lions.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
I mean,
there was a year when we were 15-1 playing the Chiefs, who at the time were like 0-12. They shellacked us.
Yeah.
But you went into that thinking you're like with the hubris of we're going to win.
Well,
like
anybody who's 12-0 going to play the 0-12 team thinks,
sure, it's gonna go in like,
you know what, I think I know how
that's
this one's gonna go.
Hubris at that point.
You're right.
It's just numbers.
Yeah.
Okay, you're right.
Answer? You said something, I don't know if they're the answer. And there's somebody in sports that they call the answer. Who is that?
Oh, that's Allen Iverson.
Tony
Mandridge. Oh, yeah. AI.
I thought it was Tony Mandridge.
Oh, no, that's it. No, also not. But it's
Barry Sanders or Tony Mandridge.
Yeah. But I mean, it's you look at Justin Fields, and there was something when they drafted
or
him.
Mahomes
there was a huge amount of. Oh God, don't. There was a huge amount of hope, and I think that's the thing that kind of like again. I'm always going to be a Bears fan. Like there's something that like that's. There's no other way to go about it.
As a wise man once told me, shit in one hand and hope in the other and see which one fills up first.
Did you just make that up?
No.
Oh, that was probably from Game of Thrones or something.
No.
No.
It was from my priest.
All right, well. Didn't know you were a religious man.
I was when I was a younger fella. I almost joined the priesthood, but that's a different story.
That's another podcast.
That's an additional podcast.
I think it's time for us to say goodbye.
Yeah, we've been going on for quite a long time here. Dan, it's been a pleasure having you.
Guys, thanks for having me.
Anytime. I'm sure we'll have you back, maybe with the other Dan.
Oh,
so you could just listen to him stare at the microphone.
Well, that's why we wouldn't even need another microphone.
Yeah, exactly. He'll just be like cackling in the background every once in a while.
I've asked him. He's like, what am I supposed to say?
Hey, Buckster, is it in your shoe? Hey,
like,
Buckster.
It'll be a bunch
I'm
of like
gonna smoke a
non sequitur inside jokes and chuckles. And then
more dogs than people, man.
Chup two.
More dogs.
It's still
than
one
people.
Of my favorite. And what's awesome, though, is that my phone has gotten used to the term chup two so
oh, yeah.
much that it literally, like, it
mine
becomes
does
something like if I put in CHU, it comes up on top chup two,
yeah.
And I just.
Yeah.
That's
amazing, that's a nerdyism.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks. Thanks for being here, Jacob.
Thanks,
appreciate
guys.
It.
I'm going to go buy some cheese.
This has been episode 7. Get some cheese, man. Yeah.
That's my whole plan.
We also here at the shop, man, it's not dry January in here, let me tell you. It's very liquidy in here. Wet.
Come in and wet your whistle.
We are going to be starting some wine tasting classes coming up this winter season. So stay tuned for that. We are also going to be kind of revamping our monthly wine club subscription stuff. So we're just kind of, you know, taking this time, not in Portugal, kind of just checking things out around the business and tightening up some screws and figuring out how we want to approach 2022 with you. And yeah, stay tuned with us. Visit our website, www.voyagermke.com. Pop in for a drink, chat with us, hang out with us. Happy hours are still, we practically pay you to drink wine here during happy hours. So, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. But come on in, hang out. We miss you guys. We'll tell you all about the O'Hare International Airport. Until then, chef's kiss.